Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy.
How are you? We haven't done...
Go ahead. No, it sounds like we're both excited.
I was going to say, we haven't done like a nighttime recording in a long time.
I was just thinking that. So not that you guys probably care too much, but I think it's just interesting for us that when we both had our full-time jobs pre-COVID in an office, the only time we had to record was at night, and if needed, it was the weekends. And then when COVID hit, we had the flexibility.
Now we can say, let's take a lunch break and drop a recording in so we don't have to, you know, record at night or whatever, have time with our families.
Yes, and this just brings me back to once upon a time, we really had to squeeze in the research time and the recording time. And not that we don't now, it's just honestly we had a lot less before.
Oh, for sure. For me especially, like, I don't commute 2 hours a day.
Holy mackerel.
I'm at home.
That's crazy.
So anyway, anyway.
Before we just go on and on about nothing to you guys, I had trouble finding a case this week. In general, that had details. Sometimes these weeks happen, and sometimes you get flooded with a whole bunch of cases where you're like, wow, I actually don't know what to choose from. They're all important. But it was just running into brick wall after brick wall. And then Melissa will tell you, I got totally sidetracked into starting on the bonus. And yeah, that was something. But anyway, stay tuned for that. And then I didn't give up, but I like took a break from it for a moment, and I had heard of and maybe even texted you a few weeks ago, Melissa, about a new show on Paramount Plus, and it's called Never Seen Again, and there's only like 6 episodes or something like that. It's relatively new, and I had looked through the list, and it looked to me a lot like Disappeared. Except I think it's trying to go in slightly different direction. So this is developed by Tyler Perry, and I think he is taking it in a different direction. But I started watching one of the people that I hadn't heard about because a lot of these shows,
for lack of better terms, cover Maura Murray. Like, or cover, you know, the ones that are big in the media.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think we learned a lot about who's out there from Disappeared, people that couldn't get the coverage, for sure. But I think that he is going a different direction as well. And he's not going, he's covering any case really that people are bringing to the table. There's no discrimination or anything. And I think that's what he's going for. So I started watching this one case, the first case that I watched, and I was like, wow, this is really fascinating. I hadn't heard of it. It is a Canadian case, and I just got so invested in it that I wanted to do it. And the way that I went about it wasn't, of course, on purpose, but what happened was I actually have more resources of things that I watched than things that I read.
That's interesting, but hang on.
Which is quite accurate.
I just want to tell you, Tyler Perry's series, Never Seen Again, is how people heard about the two men in Florida that were never seen again after they got in the cop car.
Yeah, Terrence and
yes.
Felipe.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So, really interesting. I got invested in this, and there is stuff on it, yes. But I promise you that if you turn to whoever's sitting next to you right now and ask them who this person was, they probably wouldn't know. And if they don't know, then they need to know. So, I'm going to hopefully aid in getting this story out there, just like we do with all the others, and tell you about Marshall Iwasa. And this is scribbled on so many pieces of scrap paper and post-its, so bear with me, everyone. So Marshall Iwasa was born on January 3rd of 1993, and he grew up in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. For reference, this is about an hour north of Montana. So even, I'm going to break this down for you even more. So if you're looking at Canada on a map, there are several provinces, and British Columbia is West Coast, and the next province right to the east of it is Alberta. So those are the areas that we're going to be talking about. So you're looking at more of the western part of Canada. Marshall's mother, Tammy, raised his sister, Paige, and him. It seems like their primary caregiver was Tammy with extended family support. In the things that I've read and seen, there has not once, I feel pretty safe saying that, not once have I heard a thing about Marshall and Paige's father outside of they got divorced before Marshall even turned one. It seems like a close-knit, happy family. In an interview, Paige described herself as more like aggressive or assertive, I'd probably say assertive, where Marshall was quiet, kind, kind of reserved. Marshall was a good student early on and grew interested in football, rugby, bodybuilding, and hiking. He was pretty well-rounded, I guess you can say. And mostly all the articles I read list these particular activities in the same order, like the same exact ones. His family also liked the outdoors, and they camped yearly in Montana. He also camped with friends, so he's not just a hiker. He very much likes being outdoors. At some point, Paige, his sister, marries, and she moves to Hawaii, and she has a family of her own. Marshall was really a hands-on uncle, and he was probably the cool uncle. He yearly made a trip to Hawaii. I think it was at Christmas, and they celebrated, and they hung out on the beach, and they explored. It, by all accounts, sounded really wonderful. And Paige would actually visit Canada as well. I believe I read that it was like once every 6 months. So they saw each other pretty frequently, and arguably maybe more than some families see each other when they live in the same state or even town. Paige and Marshall were pretty close, and they texted pretty often after she moved. It was roughly weekly, which I think is pretty great if you're living out of state and you have a teenage little brother. And that was pretty consistent until Marshall went to school. Now, just to back up, after high school, Marshall went right to work in several hands-on type jobs. So he was doing like some type of maybe construction or like line work, working on pipelines, according to a sister. She's actually done several interviews, and that's a lot of the things that I've watched. But before long, he decided that he was going to go back to school, and this was probably the best path for him, and he started exploring IT programs. He applied, and he started in 2018 at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. Marshall made the 2-hour move north to Calgary from his home. So that's the background. And quite frankly, it sounds pretty ideal. A close-knit family, they're adventurous, they travel. Through the distance, they remain really close. Marshall has direction in his life. Paige has started her family. Tammy has raised 2 beautiful children. This brings us to Sunday, November 17th of 2019. And at this period of time, I can't help but to think about as everyone does, it's almost like that September 11th response, like, what were you doing on this date or leading up to that date? You know, like, we know September 11th, it's still warm out. We're starting school because right. you and I were seniors in high school.
Yep.
So we don't just remember the day. We kind of remember the weather and the all around vibe. So I hear Sunday, November 19th, 2019, and my head goes to, wow, in like 4 or 5 months, we're on lockdown.
Yeah. It was I go, wow, that was the last holiday season as we knew them.
Right. Very similar train of thought, yep. right? It all stems from the marker of March of 2020 of COVID.
Right.
So anyway, I do bring that up because I know maybe you all are thinking it, but also I keep this in my head throughout this investigation. Marshall made the 2-hour trip from Calgary to Lethbridge. Now, this isn't really unusual. He goes home to visit pretty often. And I know 2 hours seems maybe pretty intense, but as someone who literally went to school 2.5 hours away, Melissa, you remember, I went home not every weekend, but maybe once a month. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, for sure.
And I definitely stupidly would do like one-nighters where I would spend a whole afternoon coming home in traffic on a Friday just to come home like Sunday morning or something.
Yes.
Anyway, so that day it can be concluded or at least hypothesized that Marshall started off at home. He was taking care of his chores and just kind of like doing whatever he needed to do to prepare to leave. He intended to go home because of two reasons. He needed to go home to help his mom with some tech issues that she was having. And I kind of assume when someone says that, like it's a computer issue. And who better in an IT program to come and help with that than him?
Well, no, I think beyond that, like my parents have, anytime they have a tech issue, it's, you know, we need to print this to fax it. So, but the probably in the same age range, you know what I mean? So it probably could be.
Yeah.
I could see that just being like, all right, Mom, I'll come home this weekend and I'll help you.
Right. And honestly, like if we asked her point blank, she would be able to tell us because she's a witness. So it's not really that big of a deal. But just to show you how normal this is, I'm just kind of giving some context. So he also had another purpose to come home too. So the family had like a storage locker or a storage room in a facility. You're all familiar with them, I'm sure. And it seems like they stored a lot of different things in there, like holiday things. But in this particular case, Marshall kept a lot of his, like, gadgets, IT stuff, computer stuff. I know my stepdad is kind of techie, so he has a whole room dedicated to this. And it's really weird because I'm like, why do you have 6 computers? And if I asked him, I would be, like, lost in 2 sentences. But it would probably be like, because I need this part to go in this one and whatever. So it's not unusual to have a whole bunch of items like this, I don't think, with the people that I've known. So anyway, that's what he had to do. He had to stop there and grab something for his computer. So he helped his mom around 10:30 on Sunday night. And he left around 11. Good spirits. Nothing out of the ordinary happened. She did say, you know, like, it's late, you're invited to stay. And he said, thank you. No, I have to get to the storage locker to get what I need. And I would assume maybe because it's a Sunday night that he's probably intending to drive back to Calgary. But I'm not really sure. We don't, at least I don't know, or they haven't disclosed what the intention was. Nevertheless, he leaves at 11. And his mother, as she says in the series, never seen again, she said that she loved him and she'd see him later. And that was the last time Marshall was ever seen. Go ahead, Melissa. I know you're kind of like, huh?
Well, no, I was going to say, do we know if he ever made it to the storage locker?
I will get there.
Okay.
Because I would like to say yes or no, but surprisingly, it's a loaded question.
Oh, gosh.
So on November 23rd, just 5 days later, in Pemberton, British Columbia, in a completely, and I'll explain later, remote area, a truck was found and reported by hikers. The Royal Mount Canadian Police determined that the owner of the truck belonged to Marshall. Marshall's family was contacted. His family, when they were contacted about the truck, kind of just had, I think, an assumption that I might, that his truck was stolen and ditched somewhere, abandoned. Until the family learned that the truck had been burned almost beyond recognition. Police went on to say that all around the truck, there were all sorts of items strewn around, all around the car, with various IDs and identifying items that supported the fact that it was Marshall's truck. Police began searches within days, but unfortunately, searches were shut down due to the weather. I mean, family and friends, they didn't understand. I mean, they did understand and they didn't, but they felt very hopeless and they were like, he could be out there. Why are you shutting things down? Pretty soon after, I mean, the RCMP came to kind of conclude or believe and stated their beliefs was that Marshall died by suicide. And they determined that.
And then lit his truck on fire?
We'll get there. They said, yes, it's suspicious, but not criminal. So after the weather starts getting bad in this remote area, it really hinders the investigation. Nothing really happens from there. And on day one, when they started to investigate the crime scene, there was nothing that supports in anything that I've read that the police did much of anything to secure the scene. So if you go online, and I will try and have Melissa give as many pictures on Instagram as possible because I think they're really telling. The hikers that found or came across the truck and the whole scene had taken pictures. Just a few days later, police had taken pictures, and the pictures of the items just don't match.
Okay.
So it really doesn't sound like any securing of the scene had been done.
And if you can't, whatever.
After the scene got bad in terms of the weather, nothing really could be done until May of the following year, essentially, because this is November.
Which would be at the height of COVID.
Well, now we're looking at that piece. And granted, I just didn't have the time. I thought a little about doing this, but I don't know what Canadian protocol was. But I do know that a lot of the world was very much on the page of lockdown, wear your mask if you're going out. So I do assume to a certain degree that Canada did the same. But anyway, nevertheless, nothing really could be resumed until about May of the next year. They brought cadaver dogs out. They brought search teams out. They brought ATVs. And they found nothing. And this was at this time, that is when they did the fire investigation of the vehicle. So it had been months.
And a whole winter. So it got wet and froze and then.
And it's unsecured.
Okay.
Absolutely. And really, the only thing that came of that was that.
I was going to say, what could they possibly get?
It was undetermined.
Oh, shocker.
So pretty much after that, the family kind of felt frustrated. So this family is amazing. They advocate wonderfully for themselves. They've done a lot of their own work. They've gotten private investigations going. And let me just tell you how understanding they are. I mean, yes, they're frustrated with the investigation and that they just kind of landed on suicide. But what's remarkable about them is they're like, we're open to any theory, right? Like, no, we have our thoughts about what it could be. But if you said to us that he died by suicide, we would say, okay, like, we didn't see it, but sometimes you don't know what's going on. And we would be able to say, okay, that's tragic. So they're not like saying, you need to tell us this is foul play or anything. It's like, please tell us how you can determine suicide. Give us evidence that you're determining that. And Tammy had said that an officer came to her home and literally told her about this story about a veteran or something that drove all the way across Canada or something like that. And basically took his own life there. And that was his plausible reason, I guess, why this could be the same thing. Take that for what it's worth. In July of 2020, the family decided they wanted to go up to see where the truck was. It was still there. and they wanted to earlier, but it was just too dangerous. And let me tell you about the terrain, okay? Now, I said it was rugged or something to that effect, but this to me seems so absolutely intense. What I left out, and it's going to shock you, I think, is the distance between Lethbridge and Pemberton is roughly 14 hours.
No, you mean miles.
14 hours. His family, in July, not November, decided they were going to take the trek and go to that part of Pemberton where his truck was found.
Wait, how is it 14 hours away?
I don't know what to tell you, but that is where the earth landed these two spots. Okay. This area is remote, and it's very hard to get to, like I'm trying to explain to you. But it is a destination for some, I guess you would have to be an avid hiker. There is a hut there called the Brian Waddington Hut. It's a structure that people go to. That's why the hikers were there. They were staying at this hut. And when they were out exploring or whatever, they came across the truck. Nevertheless, just so you know kind of what this area is a little bit about. Nothing else anywhere. The family reported that in July when they went, it took them actually 30 hours to get there. Some other family that went, it took 40 hours for them to get there. They stated that due to some of the roads and them being rough to travel on, they were closed and they would have to take alternate ways. But that's not even the hard part, even though that seems like it. When they finally got to Pemberton, there was a group that had volunteered to take them up to the truck. And they're kind of like an ATV group. They do this all-terrain type stuff. And they said, you're not going to be able to really get there with ease in a vehicle. So let's take you on these ATVs. They said that this place isn't something you can GPS. Google Maps doesn't have the location. You would have to know where it is. Even with the help of their maps that they did have, they got lost with these experienced all-terrain team. In one interview, Paige says they had to stop several times to let air out from the tires so that when they went over rugged rocks, that it wouldn't pop or destroy the tires.
That's really common in four-wheeling. My husband has a four-wheel drive SUV, and when we go to the beach, he has to let air out of his tires to drive on the beach.
So, yeah, just for you to back that up, that's definitely a thing. I'm sure a lot of you out there know that. I don't know that I didn't know it. It sounded like, oh, yeah, that makes sense when I heard it. When they finally got there, they had brought in their own private fire investigator. They noticed that a lot of the stuff seemed like it could be Marshall's. Later, I'll just hop right there pretty quick, when Paige had identified items from her brother's home, she had noticed that things like she saw at the scene, like an Xbox or something, actually didn't appear to be his because they were at his apartment. But I don't know. He could have had two. He could have been repairing them for friends. Who knows? But, you know, she made a point of it, so I wanted to make a point of it, too. The fire investigator was kind of, like, scratching his head because he was like, first off, like, this... I think he concluded that it looked like arson. So I'll just hop right there. No surprises. He said what led him to believe this was all the doors in the vehicle were left open, which tells him that whoever did this wanted oxygen to get at the fire so that it would burn completely. What he also noticed was the floorboards of the car or the truck were still there. And he thought that was weird because that means that the original investigators never tested anything to see if there were human remains there.
Okay.
So that's the other piece. And finally, one of the reasons that it was labeled or determined that it was an undetermined cause was that there was no accelerant or whatever. But this investigator found a charred Zippo lighter right at the scene and imagined that that would have been how the fire started. So right off the bat, I mean, he's like, I just don't even understand how they could determine something like this. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, I mean, that's pretty much as far as they've gotten. They've petitioned for this to be investigated as criminal. They've gotten nowhere. They're very frustrated. and there's no information, and there's never been a sighting. So a few key points are the storage facility. So I said that Marshall hadn't been seen after his mother saw him when he left. He said he was going to the storage facility, and it appears as though he went. So what Marshall probably didn't know was that you could only access the facility between certain hours. So when he went, they were able to recognize that a key code had been used several times throughout the night, but he wasn't getting in because it was closed. There were points where he seemed to give it a break, or I don't know if he drove away and came back or whatever. Nevertheless, early in the morning, maybe it was around 6:30, the key code worked and he got in, and it was determined that he was there until 8:30, or someone was there till 8:30 and left at 8:30. Now, we don't know if it was Marshall, because by the time police went to the storage facility, the footage had been deleted. You know, because gas stations, places like that, only keep their footage for a certain amount of time.
7 days or something.
Yes. So that was unfortunate. I mean, we can assume that it was him. And if so, that would mean he was in the area until 8:30 that morning. But after that, he cannot be tracked. His financial records, nothing has occurred on his financial records whatsoever since I think even a day or two before he disappeared.
Well, how would he drive 40 hours without gas or anything?
Bingo. That is my next point. So the family took careful note that on their way to Pemberton, that they needed to fill up 2 or maybe 3 times. There's no way this truck on all the routes that they imagine he could have gone, did not fill up that truck at some point. There is not a single gas station or a person that recognizes him, sighted him, or has footage of him on their cameras to point to him stopping and getting gas or that vehicle stopping and getting gas anywhere.
Okay, so he didn't drive 14 hours.
I don't know. So let me just get to theories, because maybe we can talk about that within the theories.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So we have the police who thinks that died by suicide. And granted, I'm using really the same theories as the Never Seen Again series, because I literally had them played out in my head and then they listed them. And I'm like, I 100% agree with those theories as being likely ones to use, or arguable ones. So there's died by suicide, there's foul play, and there's leaving his life. So let's start by talking about dying by suicide.
Well, hold on. Can I just tell you the first thing I did was obviously Google Reddit?
Yeah.
And I found an article, and it says, it's like this whole summary of like Reddit. And then at the end it says, okay, so according to Reddit, he either died by suicide or he was murdered. And I really want to be like, you needed to sum up the entire thing to end up where we're starting.
Fascinating.
Sorry, sidetracked.
No, you're good. If you have anything else that you're reading about, totally bring it to the table, because I'm pretty lost. So I will start off by saying that no one has ever identified any outward or visible signs of mental health struggles or substance use.
So he just, and I'm not saying they can't have no signs, right?
But correct.
There doesn't seem to... I guess I don't know what I'm trying to put out there, because I was going to say, but where did he go? How did he drive 14 hours and all of that to then die by suicide?
And burn your truck? Because if it wasn't started by arson, then it was started by himself, or like by foul play slash arson, it was started by himself. So your only other option is that he set his car on fire. And let me add one additional fact that I apologize I left out about that private investigator, the arson investigator or fire investigator, who also noted that the fire started in the passenger side cabin of the car and not in the engine where a fire would be thought to have started.
Okay.
So if we're looking at died by suicide, he drove 14 hours at an area that most family and friends argue that he didn't know about. And even if he did go there once in a while, it's not an easy area to get up to. And then he decided to set his car on fire after throwing his stuff everywhere. He takes his phone and his wallet with him and then goes into the rugged terrain, hasn't been seen or been found by cadaver dogs and hikers since. The last part could be true, but driving 14 hours and setting your car on fire doesn't really scream died by suicide to me.
I completely agree. But then there's a lot of questions. Did he encounter foul play before the sewage unit? After?
Right. So let me just finish up on suicide for a moment. The only other thing that points to perhaps suicide in some people's eyes is the family later learned that Marshall didn't appear to have enrolled in the following semester at school, which the family is like, they don't really feel as if, at least what I gather from them, is if he was intentionally trying to hide it or withhold it, but that he just hadn't, you know, figured out how to say it or whatever, that he would have. But the other thing to me is I work with a couple of college kids, and a couple of them had dragged their feet to enroll in classes and stuff, and they wait until the last actual minute. It's happened more than once. It's happening with a couple of people I know now. And I don't think we can write that off either.
I agree with you.
But if he did not go back to school, would that have been enough for him to die by suicide?
I was going to say the alternative is not to die by suicide.
What do you mean?
When you say, what are his choices? Don't go back to school. And I was answering the alternative is not die by suicide. You know, they're not, those are his choices.
But then I go back to, okay, so you have decided to die by suicide and drive your truck to an area that you don't know, have likely never been. If you have, it's been once or twice. Set your car on fire, throw your stuff about, and that's it?
Yeah, no.
Of all the many scenarios that we've thrown out there, I'm like, that one just sounds like over the top. And for what?
Okay, so that leaves us at foul play.
Or leave your life. Let me tell you a couple of things about leave your life. Okay, he doesn't want to go back to school. Things aren't really awesome. I don't know. You're like, I'm going to leave my life. Then you drive 14 hours, set your car on fire with the small amount of money you have and the passport that you left on the ground and your IDs that you left on the ground. That's how you're going to leave your life. And another thing that supports that is Paige stated that her family has all, on a couple of occasions, used Snapchat to message him, and they've been opened.
When?
At different points after his disappearance. There's no, what, she's reported it to the police. She and mom are, you know, a little bit hopeful, but it sounds like they recognize that it could be a glitch too.
Why can't they? Oh, never mind. Okay.
So those are kind of the reasons that they look at leaving life. But the family is like, as much as we'd rather believe that to be true than for him to be gone, we've always supported him and going away and exploring and doing all this stuff.
Yeah, if that's him leaving his life, that's an angry, like, literally, here's all my stuff, here's my identity, I'm burning it, I'm done. I don't think he has any reason to be that angry.
At least not from family and friends has there been something. I mean, there's no cutoffs in his life that I know of. He obviously went to help his mom out. He has a relationship with his sister where he goes to Hawaii and he spends time with her.
With his nieces and nephews?
Correct. So that one's a little hard for me to wrap my head around too.
Okay, then let's talk about what we both think is what happened.
And you'd be right. I do think it is foul play.
I mean, to me, die by suicide has 0%. Leaving his life right now has 40%.
Okay.
But I haven't talked through foul play either.
Right. He's got a couple of friends in Calgary, sure. But he has no mental health, no substance use. He's quiet, kind of reserved. No one's talked about any enemies or anything like that. So people have thrown out hitchhiker that he picked up or something. Then I say to myself, drive the car to the hardest place you can find?
No, and 14 hours, no.
Well, okay, here's the part I can wrap my head around. So if I can just drive it until no one's looking for me anymore, get rid of the car, burn it because, you know, I hurt this kid or my DNA's in it. I get that to a degree, right? But first, why would you choose the hardest place to get to? I guess unless you thought if it's the harder it is to get to, the harder it is to find.
The hardest find, yeah.
But then you threw out everything from the car. Why wouldn't you burn that too? And lastly, if you burn the car up there, who's your ride home? How you getting out?
Okay, so when do you think he was kidnapped?
It's really hard to say. So I believe it was him at the storage locker. Waiting. He needed something maybe for school. And he was like, I can't leave until I get it.
I wonder if he needed something that no one knew he had.
Maybe. That's a possibility. But here's where it gets...
But keep going.
We have nothing about the timeline. So we don't think he went back to his apartment because it was in pretty pristine condition. But he could have made the 2 hours to Calgary and something happened there. But even if he left...
Wait. Was the car... The place his car found... What direction was it from where he was versus Calgary?
So Calgary was 12 hours from Pemberton.
Yeah, what I was trying to figure out is Calgary on the way? And it is.
Yes and no.
According to MapQuest or Google Maps, you'd have to drive through Calgary to go.
It's one of four ways to go. So hours...
Okay, so we don't know if he got the 2 hours to Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, according to my side, the best way to go from Lethbridge to Pemberton is to go through Calgary.
Right. Well, and then we assume that it's definitely him at the storage facility leaving at 8:30, and that would be the 18th, okay? So the shortest trip would only put them 12 hours ahead. And honestly, we don't know if he died before he got up there, if he died, or was released or taken or whatever. So he could have walked out of the storage facility and been in harm's way within minutes, hours.
Right.
So the fact that we don't have him on camera really tells us nothing. But the soonest the truck could have been up there is 12 hours... And 50 minutes after he left the storage facility, which puts you at 8:30, 10:30 p.m. or 11 or so on the 18th, which still leaves you 4.5-5 days until the truck was found. So that's a big window of time. And that's in winter conditions. I mean, his family said it took 30 hours to get to the truck from their home.
I think whatever happened... There was constant travel.
Why?
If he didn't go back to his house, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many places you can go before you're going to go home. So, you know, you are out all night with this, trying to deal with this storage unit. Put yourself in his shoes, okay?
Okay.
At 8:30, you finally leave. You got what you want. You're happy.
Yep.
You drive 2 hours back to your town,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you live.
Yep.
How long could you go without going home?
If I have money, I can eat out all day, but if I didn't sleep all night, it can be done, but I would have to return home at night. I would have to crash somewhere.
Exactly. Okay. That's sort of my point. My point is we can shrink that window because if no one went into his house again, something happened between 8:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m., not 8:30 a.m. in 4 days. You see what I'm saying?
That's one way to look at it, yeah.
Okay. I wanna know what was so important at the storage unit that he was willing to stay there all night.
I don't necessarily... I mean, I think it was probably important. I understand it was for his computer, but if you had made a 2-hour trip for something that you needed, and in the middle of the night you discover that maybe your key code doesn't work because it's not during hours of operation, your choice is drive 2 hours with the thing that without the thing that you needed, or wait a couple of hours, sleep it off in your car until they open.
I would go home, but I hear what you're saying.
I actually don't think that I would go home. I think I would be of that mind, like, I drove and went through all the trouble to get
but
here.
But he entered the code all night long, correct?
There were periods of time that he stopped, yes.
I think something happened to him at the storage unit or close to it.
Do you think that it was random? I mean, this part's a little bit harder. We have zero information that anything was going on in his life or that he had enemies or whatever.
So, do I think it was random in that a person drove by and decided to grab him? No. Yes, it was random. But do I think it was random in that whoever did it with intention? Yes. I think they were looking for a victim.
Do you think it could have been a carjacking?
No.
No? Why?
You're going to jack a car and then drive that far and burn it? Whoever dumped the truck knew that area.
Yeah, I agree. And I really hesitate to think that the person was alone in November in the woods that's just going to walk away and be fine. So I kind of wonder if some other person was involved.
Two perpetrators, you mean? Two
correct
people? Yes, I agree with you.
If you've harmed this victim, if you've harmed Marshall, and you drove the truck up there, and you don't have another person, your only option is to walk your way through it. If you know the area, maybe it can be done. I don't know if there's other places to camp out or whatever, but to me, it's like you have to have someone follow you with an ATV.
I agree with you there.
But I don't understand why throw his stuff all outside the vehicle.
In case they did find it, they would say, look, it definitely is his.
So you're telling me someone that harmed Marshall then had some compassion to make sure he...
No, I'm saying it so that way they didn't look for anyone else about any other area, crimes or anything. It was, oh, we know whose truck this is. It's not from here.
Okay.
I think the person that did it is from the area the car was found. And I take it back. He wasn't attacked at this storage unit. He was attacked in Calgary. I think that it's two people and they were looking for a victim and a big city's place to do it.
Honestly, it's as plausible as any other thing. Well, no, that's not true. It's more plausible than a lot that I've heard. But I can't think of a different reason to argue with you.
Yeah, I think it's that two screwed up guys and they wanted a victim.
And they knew enough to destroy DNA or fingerprint evidence.
No, they knew enough that the Royal Mountain Police in the area they're in would see a burned up truck and be like, whatever.
Yeah, maybe so. I guess I can't wrap my head around why, though. Like, money, the truck itself, and where is Marshall?
No, I think they're beyond mentally ill. They are looking for a victim for no reason.
Here's the part that is going to make you nuts, too. How did they get to Pemberton without any footage of them filling up?
If they went with looking for a victim, they had gas cans in their truck.
I mean, yeah, I thought of that, too. But, geez, that's intense.
Thanks for making my night criminal minds over here.
It's really sad. You'll see a whole bunch of things that his family have online. There's so many pictures of him. He looks like just the sweetest, kindest, most free-spirited guy. I'm really sad for his family and his mom, who just isn't the same and will never be the same until she knows what happened to her son. But spread the word, everyone. Go watch Never Seen Again. I appreciate that episode. there were lots of YouTubers, really talented YouTubers, that covered this story. I want to make one mention of one that I think you should check out, because this YouTuber does just an amazing job of citing a whole bunch of sources that he uses and particular interviews that he's referencing. I believe it's called Searchlight. You'll see it in my references when I when we post them, because a lot of my information did come from those. I just wanted to make some like honorable mentions, so to speak. But anyway, I'll wrap this up. You all done, Melissa? You ready to open it up to everyone?
Yeah. I think I want to know what everyone thinks about leaving their life, because that could be convinced. But I more want to know is when you think something happened and how it happened.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd be really curious for a better why. I don't...
Oh, for sure.
I don't like the... They're just crazy. I don't like it.
No, I don't mean they're... I mean they're crazy in that... To kill someone else, you have to have...
I agree with you, but that is an explanation given sometimes. They're just nuts. They're just crazy. And I'm like, tell me what triggered them. Like, I need more than that.
Right. Well, that's Amy's mental health professional.
I guess. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Spread the word. Talk about it, your theories with us. And I guess...
We'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks.
I have to say it because Amy doesn't know.
Bye, guys. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.